the Agile brand.
Welcome to Season 6 of the Agile Brand, where we discuss marketing technology and customer experience trends, insights, and ideas with enterprise and technology platform leaders. We focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make brands successful, scalable, customer-focused, and sustainable. This is what makes an Agile brand. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advising Fortune 1000 brands on MarTech, marketing operations, and CX, best-selling author and speaker. The Agile Brand Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to teksystems.com. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that my latest book, Priority is Action, 7 Principles for Better Strategies, Decisions, and Outcomes, is now available. In it, I give ideas and insights for leaders and teams that need to make meaningful progress on their priorities. After all, our priorities are what we do, not what we say we'd like to do. You can find Priority is Action on Amazon or learn more on my website, gregkilstrom.com. Now let's get on to the show. Today we're going to talk about the ethical use of AI and how the concept of left brain, right brain AI can give businesses the best of all things by helping them to create great customer experiences that are valuable to the business while using AI in a responsible way. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Peter van der Putten, Director of AI Lab at Pega. Peter, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Great to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to talking about this topic with you. Why don't we get started with you giving a little background on yourself as well as your role at Pega?
No, absolutely. So, like I said, I'm heading up the AI Lab. So it's not like some huge building with hundreds of people in white lab coats. But what I do is basically I look at how AI can be used to drive responsible impact at large companies, but also applying that to Pega itself. So developing new go-to markets with AI, for example. Last year, we made a big foray into generative AI, but also looking at how we can apply it in a responsible manner. You mentioned ethical applications of AI, or you know, what is responsible AI, trustworthy AI, those type of things as well. So thinking beyond just the technology, but also the proper application of that that technology. So that's my role at Pega. And then one day a week, I still stay connected to the academic world as well. So I'm also part of assistant professor at Leiden University in the Netherlands.
Great, wonderful. Well, yeah, looking forward to talking about this with you. So, you know, we've talked quite a bit about different aspects of AI on this show. And, you know, so most listeners probably have at least a good or understanding of some of the ethical implications of AI usage, and certainly have either heard secondhand or maybe experienced even firsthand some of the benefits of AI-based tools in their work already. But I think this concept of left brain, right brain AI might need a little explanation. So why don't we start with that? You know, how would you explain this concept of left brain, right brain AI?
Yeah, I think I empathize with what you're saying. You know, people maybe get lost a little bit in all the AI hype, you know,
right.
that's happening outside, either the doomerism that we're kind of predicting that, you know, robots will take over the world next year versus pure techno optimist. You know, there seem to be new AI technologies coming out every week, left, right, and center, you know, the likes of OpenAI, Google, and you name it. So it's easy to get a little bit lost in this whole AI landscape. So that's where this metaphor of left brain and right brain could be helpful, because I use it to explain a little bit, you know, what are the different types of AI that are out there. You could say similar to people, I use the brain metaphor then a little bit loosely. But we have our left brain, which is more, you know, concerned with making rational, or we think at least rational decisions. And we have our right brain, which is more our creative brain. Yeah. So, and if I map that back to AI, then the typical left brain AI type technologies are things like, not just machine learning and predictive analytics, but you can also, if you need to decide on what is the best course of action, what marketing offer to show to a customer, or whether we can accept them for a loan or not, or when an insurance claim comes in, whether we can pay it out. that's a little bit of an automated decisioning problem, where you have different courses of actions you could take. You maybe make predictions, you sense information, interpret that information, and you make predictions for different courses of actions you could take and whether they're optimal or not. Yeah, so that's very much fitting then this left brain type metaphor. Whereas this whole area of generative AI is much more about, fits much better kind of this creative aspect of our brains, you know, to create stuff, to come up with new ideas. So generative AI can generate text, we can generate images, but, you know, more conceptually, we can also generate ideas, maybe entire applications or plans on what to do next. And obviously, just like in our regular brain, you know, if you combine left brain with right brain, that's, of course, the ultimate, the ultimate combination of different AI technologies. And so, but it could be a helpful metaphor because, you know, it's not something that we frame then a lot into, you know, are you using a model X, Y, or Z or AI technology A, B, C, or D, but much more, you know, talking about and our left brain decision-making capabilities versus our right brain creative abilities.
Yeah. So why is it helpful? I mean, I can think of some reasons already, I think, but like, you know, why is it beneficial to, for businesses to think about AI in terms of, again, not just this monolithic thing, but, you know, this left brain, right brain, you know, what does it allow them to do more easily?
Well, I think one of the things is that actually would if you follow AI Twitter or, you know, if you spend some of your time procrastinating, you know, reading AI news on the internet, it seems that all there is in AI nowadays is generative AI.
Right, right.
And that's definitely not true. You know, like companies have been using, let's say, left brain AI already for years. So actually, you know, we've been surrounded by AI, as consumers, we've been surrounded by AI systems for, well, at least the last 20 years. Every day, you're probably Googling something and then you listen to your Spotify-generated playlist, but also you're seeing online ads that are generated and that are kind of decided upon by AI. You get into your car and you navigate to a particular destination. So as citizens or as consumers, we're confronted with AI hundreds of times per day. But the thing is, it's the AI that we hardly ever notice. Yeah, and I think that's a little bit the big difference with the likes of ChatGPT, is that for many, it's the first time that they got like more of a firsthand experience of actually almost like making the AI. We're doing prompt engineering. We're kind of guiding the AI in a particular direction. And your mom is generating recipes using ChatGPT, or your kid is doing like an elementary school exercise and preparing for it with ChatGPT. So there is a big difference in that sense that actually kind of opened up AI to a much wider audience in the public, wider set of consumers and citizens. And as such, of course, CEOs also woke up and said, we're asking the direct reports like, hey, but if my mom can generate a cookie recipe with generative AI, why are we not using this here internally in our bank or in our insurance company or in our telco? And so I think the usefulness is to remind ourselves there's more to AI than just right brain AI. And it will help us to think about what could be good applications of AI within a company and be open to these different forms of AI.
Yeah, and definitely there's a lot of different potential applications. I mean, you mentioned some on the end consumer end as well, but you know, what I wanted to focus on today is specifically around the customer experience and, you know, how we apply this left brain, right brain thinking from an AI approach to CX. So to start, I think it would help to talk a little bit about, for those less familiar with Pega, you know, what sets Pega apart from some of its competitors, and also just a high level of, you know, what exactly do we mean when we say things like next best action compared to simpler like marketing automation and other things. So do you mind just giving a brief overview here before we dive deeper?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you think more of these kind of enterprise AI use cases, and particularly when it's related to customer experience.
Yeah.
You can think of one-to-one customer engagement, one-to-one marketing, or customer service, and making customer service also, you know, going from reactive customer service to more proactive, customer-centric customer service. But you can also think of, you know, intelligent workflow, workflow automation. Now, whilst it sounds a bit more like back office, yeah, there's many processes where customer experience is key. Yeah? So if I'm an insurance company, a workflow like underwriting or workflow like claims, that's really a moment of truth and a key workflow for me as an insurance company. And so these are some typical areas where we apply the combination of AI and automation to drive better outcomes, both for the customer and for businesses. And like I said, we're using a combination of AI and automation. And yeah, there could be different levels or stages of maturity of using it in those particular areas that I just spoke about.
Yeah.
I can give some examples of those different stages later on, but ultimately the North Star here is to really become something which we call the autonomous enterprise, you know, a self-driving business that uses AI and automation to optimize all kinds of business processes and customer interactions.
So taking that, going back to the left brain, right brain, then, you know, and matching it with some of the things you just mentioned about, you know, whether it's autonomous enterprise or some of the details as well, what becomes possible when, you know, applying this left brain, right brain approach that might have been difficult before?
Yeah, great question. Let me give you some examples in those use cases of one-to-one marketing and customer service and maybe some of these intelligent processes, and give some examples of left brain and right brain AI in those areas. So if we start with one-to-one customer engagement, one-to-one marketing, personalization, then let's say a traditional marketing automation approach is more like, it's December, right? So we got our, you know, whatever, we're getting ready for customers who are shopping. So we're going to run our credit card points campaign or whatever it is. So quite product centric, and, you know, we're blasting it out to all of our customers. And we, of course, we can say, oh, we want to do a better job of segmentation, but that, you know, that becomes quite unmanageable quite quickly. Now, what you could do more of an AI-based approach is to really become more customer-centric and really say, no, let's not take one particular product or campaign as a starting point, but let's take customers as the starting point. So you're opening up your mobile app, you just made a big down payment, or maybe your credit card just got blocked. And so we need to personalize basically the experience towards you as a customer, but also to your particular real-time context. What let's say left brain AI can do, we can say, well, we can look at all the different offers, treatments, campaigns that we could have for a customer, and it could be a thousand of them. Let's use the left brain AI to make that smart automated decision. What are we going to talk about, right? So maybe we can use machine learning to predict for each of those next best actions and recommendations which would be most relevant for you as a customer. But let's also maybe use some more classical AI like business rules to rule out those things that, you know, that are you're simply not eligible for. And use that to rank the different types of recommendations and find out like, oh, this is probably the best thing to present to Greg, and also learn from the actual feedback. So continuously have continuous machine learning that would learn which next best actions are most likely to going to resonate. That's very much left brain, but where right brain come into play is we have this always on brain humming in the background, doing customer-centric interaction across all channels, awesome. But we see that suddenly there's a particular customer group and somehow maybe certain sets of recommendations that are not resonating with them. Let's say our gold card credit cards are not resonating with tech-savvy millennials. Now, then generative AI could come into play and say, hey, the issue is not in all this machine learning that predicts who's likely to respond. It's more that the creatives that you use, treatment text, et cetera, they're not optimal for this audience. So generative AI can take your existing treatments or, you know, suggest new treatments and basically reframe them in such a way that they might better resonate, that these gold credit card treatments better resonate with the tech-savvy millennial audience.
Yeah.
So that's an example where then the right brain AI is helping out the left brain.
To kind of build on that, I mean, some of what I do as an advisor and consultant is work with teams on some of the operational components of things similar to what you just described. So I have a little insight into this, but I'm wondering if you could explain how moving towards this more AI-driven approach with next best action and things like that changes the way that teams work with each other. So, you know, we've got, particularly in the enterprise, because, you know, that's most of our audience is from there, you know, how do existing things like siloed channels, teams, or departments that don't collaborate as often and other legacies, how do they change when you start working towards this like next best action approach?
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because it's not enough to just put in some AI capability if you don't change your marketing strategy to a customer-centric strategy, if you don't change your ways of working, then it's not going to fly, right? It's not going to work. Or actually, if you even flip it around, you know, like this is not about introducing a new AI capability. It's about doing data-driven marketing in a customer-centric way, right? Yeah. So it's actually the whole goal should be to have a new marketing strategy and to work in a new way. So what we see then, there's a shift room, for example, like you say, where people are working in a siloed channel-based manner, and that you really centralize your customer engagement strategy, where regardless of channel, you will have that contextual experience. So that also means that maybe some of the fiefdoms in that sense then need to give up the control more to kind of a central team who is really managing that customer strategy. Yeah. And it's not just about channels, but also about lines of business. Maybe before, you know, the savvy credit card campaign manager, she's maybe savvy enough to kind of get in touch with the campaign management team on the Tuesday because she knew the other demands would come in on the Thursday and she can crank out her campaigns. And then no one else could be emailed anymore because, you know, we maxed out the contact policy. Here, you know, it's more the other way around. You know, the campaigns or the offers and the treatments, they're kind of fighting for the attention of the customer and only the most relevant thing gets offered. So again, you know, there's then this central team could, as a governance layer, to look at, of course, you need to help the lines of business and the product managers to deliver on their targets, but it's really kind of getting them to supply interesting propositions that all go then into the mix of this always-on marketing brain.
Yeah.
That would decide then at the customer level what is the most relevant thing to talk about. So it's really also transforming to a more customer-centric organization in that sense, in this one-to-one marketing type example. And there's similar kind of transitions. Let's say if you're more operational, if it's in customer service, of course, there's great opportunities there as well to become more customer-centric. And for example, use left-brain AI to figure out people are calling in, what is the most likely issue that they're having, right? So you can probably already, you know, while they're waiting in the queue and you're playing some Elvis Presley, you can also play a message like, oh, we think you're calling in about topic A, and this is the solution to that topic. And you can use that intelligence that you could also give to your agents, but you could also give that to your customers directly. Yeah? Or you can use generative AI also to formulate what are the best answers to an inbound customer service email. Yeah? Or use generative AI to summarize entire conversations that are happening with the call. Again, you know, like introducing those type of this type of AI-driven service, be it left brain or right brain, and then also requires you to kind of reimagine what customer service is about. Customer service is not about running a call center. Customer service is about proactively resolving customer service issues and then providing additional moments of delight on top. And so, as an example, so you always need to balance capability with actual kind of business transformation and new ways of thinking about how you want to interact with your customers.
Yeah. And so, you know, when doing this, then, you know, are we the measures of success that we're using, are they different? Are there new measures that we want to introduce? Is it a change in thinking? I mean, obviously every business is a little bit different in, you know, in their exact measures of success, but, you know, do we need to change anything about the way that we think, you know, even philosophically about measurement, you know, when moving towards approaches like this?
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's not rocket science. Yeah. So in that one-to-one marketing approach, for example, there would be a shift towards, of course, you need to hit your numbers internally, right. But you have a bit more of a midterm, long-term focus. You're really looking at across the entire customer lifecycle. Are we making recommendations that are actually relevant? And use proxies like, do customers actually like these recommendations? Do they accept them? Do they ultimately convert? And emphasize that as opposed to just short term, like numbers around how many eyeballs have we put this message in front of.
Yeah, is it like customer lifetime value, like things like customer lifetime value as well? Is that what you're kind of saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's the customer lifetime value. It could be things like overall accept rates, response rates, and so, and then managing towards those objectives. That ultimately, you're doing the thing that's right for the customer, and that is going to drive commercial benefit. Yeah. But you're taking a bit more of a midterm point of view on that commercial benefit. Yeah? So.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, again, in the marketing example, it could be about are these recommendations relevant? Are they accepted by customers? Some of them could be sales messages, but they could definitely also be nurturing messages and welcoming messages. Or we even have banks nudging their customers to government benefits, for example, that would improve the financial resilience of their customers.
Yeah.
But ultimately, in the slightly longer term, you can actually measure and say, well, as long as we're relevant, we're able to make drastically increase actually the volume of relevant recommendations we put in front of our customers. So an example of a bank, and they have like they're a small bank, they have around 8-9 million customers, but they put something like 30-35 million recommendations in front of their customer base every single day. But still with high click-through rates, accept rates, right? So they're really on top of those accept rates and making sure that they're not recommending stuff which is irrelevant to the customer, and then they're able to crank up the volume drastically.
Yeah. So the last thing I wanted to talk about with you, you mentioned a little bit earlier, a little bit about the autonomous enterprise, but I wanted to get back to that because, you know, I think it's a powerful concept, and, you know, wanted to dive in a little deeper on that. So if you don't mind, might be repeating yourself a little bit, but, you know, what exactly do we mean when we talk about autonomous enterprise? And, you know, why is this such an important thing to be considering at this point?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I think it's a little bit of a North Star that we can aspire to as a company. But the key idea is if we can have autonomous cars, why can't we have autonomous enterprises? Enterprises that kind of are almost like self-driving businesses that use AI and automation to optimize their business goals by putting that AI and automation into processes, into interaction. Because that's where, let's say, traditional AI sometimes falls short, you know, like basements with tons of data scientists and huge data lakes and data swarms, but the insight is not hitting the interaction. So that's kind of the North Star idea that you're constantly using AI, but you're operationalizing that with automation by putting it into your key workflows, by putting it into your key CX and customer interactions to continuously improve your KPIs. But also the key point here is to learn from feedback. Yeah? So in that sense, I sometimes say, well, it's not just AI as let's say a technology we need to look at. We maybe need to look at technologies that predate AI, like cybernetics, the whole idea of a feedback loop.
That's
incredibly important. And that also helps to kind of see like, hey, you know, like I can have tons of smart data scientists that are doing AI, but if we don't build in this feedback loop, then that intelligence is useless. So that's the idea of the autonomous enterprise. Yeah, and similar to self-driving cars, so we're not into fully autonomous self-driving cars yet. Similarly, you know, there's few enterprises that can really claim that they're fully autonomous at the moment. This will be a journey. Maybe first have chaos and then start to manage your processes and then become a bit more automated.
Yeah.
And then at some point you automated everything you can automate, but then it's not about working harder, but smarter. So how can we put more intelligence into those processes and interactions, like piecewise? But then ultimately, yeah, the final stage is really then get into this autonomous loop where this AI is really driving these processes and interactions, and then you're really learning from that feedback in real time and self-optimizing it without sacrificing control for the business, because you still want to have your corporate strategic objectives, but also you need to manage all the ethical aspects around how you're interacting with your customers.
Yeah. And so, to kind of build on that, then, you know, for those listening out there that think maybe this sounds a little like science fiction, or, you know, not quite ready to hand their company over to HAL 9000 or something like that. Reality, you know, is that good leaders are already using data, whether they're, you know, a fully autonomous enterprise or not, probably not yet, but good leaders are already using data to drive their decisions. But, you know, I guess I'm wondering from this, you know, where does that... I think a lot of leaders out there, they pride themselves on their like trusting their gut and, you know, this more like knee jerk reaction or emotional reaction almost to things. You know, how do you balance things like what's the almost the role of the leader in an autonomous enterprise?
Yeah. So I think the role of the leader is you're still setting the goals and the objectives.
Yeah.
But the in the end state, really the North Star, the autonomous enterprise is self-optimizing towards those goals, and you're steering. Yeah, so it's similar to an autonomous car, and you're still in full control in an autonomous car, because you can say, "I want to go to point A and go there as quickly as possible because I'm in a hurry."
Yeah.
But you can also say, "No, take the touristy route. It's the weekend. This is a personal. It's not a company. I don't need to go to work. So take me. Use the nice route." So we are still fully in control, but the autonomous car, hundreds of times per second, is making decisions that take you closer to these goals and taking real-world constraints like traffic rules into account. So similar into an enterprise, the leaders would actually set the goals. In marketing, it could be, you know, I want to optimize these response rates and conversions recommendation rates, and we need to make sure that we save the right customers at the right cost and yada yada. But that gets translated in automated decisions these engines are actually taking when they're interacting with customers, be it in a marketing scenario, in a customer service scenario. So it is kind of moving it from a decision where the human is always involved more into these automated decisions on what kind of marketing offer to show or what is the customer service issue here and how to resolve it.
Yeah. I mean, and those things that you mentioned, those are areas where humans are notoriously not great, let's just say, at making those decisions, right? You know, so in other words, they're right maybe as often as they're wrong, but 50-50 is not good when you're running a multi-billion-dollar enterprise. So, right, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And this is really the micro level decisions Greg opening up his mobile app. What kind of recommendation are we going to show? Yeah, so there's that won't be an executive. There will be an executive who has kind of set up the rules and say, well, this is how we balance, let's say, short-term accept rates of these recommendations and relevancy rates of these recommendations versus what is the margin that we make on these recommendations. So there's a balance there, and leadership will have set those balances, and there will be monitoring of how you're tracking according to those objectives. But of course, the exec is not deciding in real time when you open up your mobile app. At that point, it's how
right.
we've set up the boundary constraints and the objectives, and the engine does the actual work, right? So that's different. That requires people see that as a shift of control. I don't think it's actually a shift of control. Similar to in an autonomous car, we are even more in charge, maybe even than in a car that we need to drive manually to the nth degree. We don't have time to be in charge of the car. Yeah. In a self-driving car, we are actually in, I would say, even in more control of the car than you know, the completely manual car. But yeah, it does require people to be open to really define more like what do we want to achieve and monitor against those goals, as opposed to getting to every single minutia of if we have customers with blonde hair and blue eyes, we're just going to show them this particular offer and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it helps humans be more strategic, which humans are pretty good at those kinds of things versus, yeah, to your point, dealing in the minutia, right?
Yeah, and the other thing is the ethical aspect that we could easily do an entire podcast on those.
Right.
But you do need to build that into those, in these automated decisions and even into your Gen AI to make sure it's transparent and fair, free from biases or within limits at least. Explainable, auditable. Yeah, that's actually very hard to do with purely human-based decisions. You would have none of that control. Yeah, whereas at least with AI and automation, you can build new logic, you can use new machine learning, you can simulate and test. If I would introduce this now into the business, does that lead to, you know, decisions that would be less fair in terms of whatever, accepting people for a loan, for example. Right? So even building in not just your corporate strategy, but also your ethics, yeah, you can only do that in automated system. And actually, we're reaching the point where first it was more like regulators, like they were all a little bit scared of these things. That's almost, now it is the other way around. You see companies getting huge fines because maybe they're offering mortgages to people who are already under financial burdened in financial debt, right? So and then they get slapped with a $500 million fine.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Peter, thanks so much for joining today. One last question before we wrap up here. You've given a lot of great insights and advice already, but what's one next best action that you'd recommend for those listening who want to improve their adoption of AI? Whether that's to utilize the left brain, right brain approach we talked about, utilize data-driven decisions, or all of the above?
Yeah, like some of the materials that we have to help these people. We actually wrote a manifesto, you know. It's easy and quick, you know. It's nine rules in a manifesto. You know, it actually took us tens of years of experience pretty much and learning from our own mistakes to be able to boil it down to just those nine rules in the manifesto. In that sense, it's similar to that famous quote of, I apologize for writing such a long letter. I didn't have time to write a short one.
Yeah.
And so a lot of energy and brain cells went into boiling it down to those nine rules in the AI manifesto. If you go to the Pega.com website, it will actually take you to a section where you can find the AI manifesto. And I think that's already hopefully a great starting point to navigate this wonderful world of AI and where you could take that to create meaningful and responsible impact.
Wonderful. Yeah, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well to make it easy on everybody. Well, great. Again, I'd like to thank Peter Vanderputten, Director AI Lab at Pega, for joining the show. You can learn more about Peter and Pega by following the links in the show notes.
Thanks again for listening to The Agile Brand, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.gregkihlstrom.com. That's GregKihlstrom.com. While you're there, check out my series of best-selling Agile Brand Guides, covering a wide variety of marketing technology topics, or you can search for Greg Kihlstrom on Amazon. The Agile Brand is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, stay agile.
The Agile Brand.